Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Right now, we are joined by Clay Travis, Outkick the Coverage, kind enough to join us while he's out one of his many beach homes, one of his many homes, I believe, vacationing right now. And Clay stepped away to join us on the show. Clay, how's it going, man?
Doing well. How are y'all?
Great. I wrote a piece yesterday spurred by this guaranteed salary talk in the NFL. I don't like the idea of guaranteed salaries in the NFL because I think it's part of what produces good football, that middling guys have to look over their shoulder and kind of fear being fired. And I went so far as to say this is something from the NFL that could benefit a lot of the rest of American life. People aren't generally scared of a bad job turning into getting fired. In the NFL, you have to be. How do you react to that?
I think there's two things that are interesting. One is the contract year phenomenon is real. That is, people work harder when they know that their money is not guaranteed. And there have been a lot of studies that have said, hey, is it just me? Or does it seem like guys who have their contracts about to expire seem to put in a little bit of extra effort, seem to kind of crystallize and focus in a way that they don't when they have guaranteed money? And two, from an ownership perspective, you have 53-man rosters, and you have guys whose careers really, like in a space of 18 months, can go from existing to not existing in one game. That can happen. So I think the physicality of the NFL is such that outside of a few positions, kicker, punter, maybe quarterback, it's really hard to justify giving somebody guaranteed money, because unlike in typically basketball or baseball, hockey maybe to a lesser extent, it's rare that a guy's career ends.
Well, like Clay, you know, you look at it to just the different markets that are out there and high-paying jobs. And yesterday we started talking about sports media. And then we used the example of Michael Smith and Jemele Hill and how much money they made and how that's just guaranteed. And you could run something into the ground, get reassigned, do less work, and still make that money. Wouldn't it be a novel idea if sports media was run like the NFL in terms of you get paid based on your output, based on your ratings, based on how much money you make the company, instead of these huge guaranteed contracts?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, not very many guys get those kind of contracts. It's a tiny minority. Most sports media members, as Paul can attest or I could attest, I mean, like, you can get fired at any moment, and it can be for something that has nothing to do with your performance. 7 years ago, I was rolling at Fan House. Everything was going perfect, and they just shut down the entire company, and there's been a lot of people who have had that happen. You know, the NFL franchise is not going to shut down, and yes, while I think that there are some people who are wildly overpaid at ESPN and certainly don't deserve their salaries relative to what they produce, those people in theory could be fired and not get any money at all if the company decided to fire them for cause. Now, usually they don't, but that's the difference between them and a lot of people in sports. Is it's almost impossible to get fired in the NBA and not get your contract. Almost impossible in Major League Baseball. Even if you're caught cheating, for instance, you might lose that paycheck, but your contract typically remains valid. So I think, you know, in general, most people, and that's why I think, you know, most people are not that sympathetic to the NFL players. Most people don't have guaranteed contracts in life. And so wherever you work, if your production declines or the company goes into harder times, you are on the chopping block. And frankly, the more money you make, the higher you move up on the chopping block.
I know you're at least a little bit of a soccer guy, not as good a World Cup without America in it, but pretty good World Cup in terms of unpredictability. Fox, to me, especially once the U.S. didn't qualify, decided to mail this thing in. To have broadcasters who, quite frankly, talk as if they're there when they're in Los Angeles calling games off a screen seems disingenuous at best and certainly cheap. How do you pay $425 million for two World Cups and then small time it where you send over a grand total of two broadcast crews.
I don't. I know that they do that on a lot of the tennis matches now, and I think it's just going to be a trend going forward, because I think when you look at the overall cost, I think they just look at the budget and say, "Hey, we've got to save money where we can." I personally can't tell the difference between when guys are there and when guys are not there, unless I know that they happen to be over in the World Cup. I can speak for the one that I went to, the Women's World Cup, which was in Canada. They had a massive crowd. They had a massive number of people that were involved. I would think it's in the hundreds, the number of employees that they sent over there. And I would bet when they got the U.S. didn't make the World Cup, they looked at the budget and said, okay, our advertising revenue is going to decline by 35%. Let's see if we can decline the expenses on this broadcast by 35%. I would guess, I'm not privy to those details, but I would guess it's just a financial decision that was predicated on the U.S. men's team probably costing tens of millions of dollars over the overall value there. I don't know what they'll do in 2022 if the U.S. is there. I don't know how that will look. I know in 2026, the positive is they basically made all that money back with the U.S., Mexico, and Canada getting to host in 2026. But I without, you know, like being privy to the details, I would guess they just said, hey, we got to cut 35% of the expense on this. How can we do it? And that was one of the ways they could do it.
Clay, I'm going to see if I can get you to say something remotely nice about ESPN. How would you compare ESPN's coverage of the World Cup when they had it to Fox's current coverage of the World Cup?
I'm going to be completely honest. I have noticed zero difference.
ESPN's a way better studio shows and analysis, and they actually showed the highlights that they had the exclusive rights to, where Fox is big on showing you 90 seconds.
I'm being honest. I think for the vast majority of people who have watched the World Cup, I don't think they have noticed where the World Cup was airing this year versus, I guess, in 2014 it was in Brazil, I think, right? I think that this goes to the larger context of things that you can't control. 2014 seems better because it's in, one, the U.S. was there, but two, it's also in a time zone when a lot of people are able to watch. For me, I finish my radio show in the morning. It's kind of ideal for me, you know, 9 a.m. in Nashville. The soccer matches start. I think for a lot of people who have normal jobs, it kind of sucks to have this time zone where they have to deal with it. It's more like in 2010. And I'm actually impressed with the amount of interest and attention I have seen, at least on my Twitter feed, even with the U.S. not involved. I think it kind of shows that the soccer market in general has been growing pretty substantially, that the numbers I think I saw, like, most recently are basically even with 2010 and not that much different with 2014 when you pull out the U.S. men's team games, even with the time zone not being ideal.
Clay Travis, OutkickTheCoverage.com is the website. Follow him on Twitter, at Clay Travis. Clay, we play a game called Fair or Foul on this show at times. So I'll ask you, fair or foul for Landon Donovan to tell Americans to cheer on Mexico at the World Cup?
Yeah, I think it's really foul. And I think in particular the fact that he got paid to do it. If he had wanted to come out and just say, hey, you know, of all the teams that are left in the, you know, that are making the World Cup, I feel the most connected to Mexico because of the impact I feel like Mexican soccer has had on, you know, my growing up, and I think he grew up in California, the fact that he played in Mexican Pro Soccer League. He can like the country. He can like the culture. All those things, I have no issue with it. I still think it seems foul even then, but I think when you add in the fact that he's lecturing Americans on who they should be rooting for and being paid by that bank to do it, I think it's incredibly foul. It's a little bit, to me, makes me sick to my stomach. It would be like if Tom Brady came out and said when Ohio State was playing for a championship, hey, my other team is Ohio State, I think people would lose their minds. You know, for people who aren't huge soccer fans, U.S. Mexico is like Yankees Red Sox. It's like Duke UNC. It's like Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Auburn. You're just not going to root for that other opponent. And so it made me queasy in my stomach. Definitely foul.
Paul?
Clay, we will be your conduit, your front-facing representatives of the zone. I invite you now to thank us for taking Jason Martin off your hands.
I'm excited. In all honesty, I'm excited for him when he came on to start doing producing for the show on Fox Sports Radio. The goal was for him to be able to get his own gig, and he's made a lot of changes in his life since he started working at Outkick. I don't want to say I've been the best thing to ever happen to him, but basically I've been the best thing to ever happen to him.
Go ahead.
He's lost like 170 pounds. He's got a great life. He's living in Brentwood, and now he has got a show on the Zone. So I'm proud of him and excited to see how he's going to do.
Is he dating anyone at this time?
I think he's got a serious girlfriend now.
Really? All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You really are the best thing to ever happen to him, Clay.
I didn't think you took it that far.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
impressive.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess his mom and dad would probably be one and two because they wouldn't exist without him. But I think I have to be three if he's being honest.
So, Clay, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are working out a deal to do a $10 million match against each other. It got me thinking about things like this, publicity stunts, essentially. Why do we not see more of these? Battle of the Sexes was so popular, and we're still talking about that. Mayweather-McGregor, to an extent, was a publicity stunt also. Would you like to see more things like this with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, they did this once before, didn't they? Didn't they do Tiger against Sergio under the lights somewhere?
It was Tiger. They did Tiger, David Duvall, Annika Sorensen, and it was like in Vegas at night under the lights. It was okay. Some sort of, like, I think it was a four-person event.
Yeah, I mean, yes is my answer. I would be interested in this. I mean, I think your average golf fan would be interested in this. Now, I want to throw one caveat in there. They have to do it before college football and the NFL starts. One of the problems golf has is they put all these events and they put them on, you know, like head-to-head. Or, I mean, I guess they could do it on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday when there are no games going on and it's in the middle of the week. But they need to schedule it smartly. What they tend to do is put this thing head-to-head against like the NFL or college football, and nobody really pays attention over the weekend. So they need to do it like a Tuesday or a Wednesday. I'm in favor in general, you guys probably are too, of the American sports calendar being better organized, because we have this huge gap in summer where I understand, like, back in the 1950s and 60s, people were concerned, oh, people go on vacation, they won't be able to watch sporting events and all those things. I don't think that really is an impact now. And so, to me, I don't understand why we still have this huge gap in the summer where there's typically not that much going on. July and August, to me, seem ripe for a lot more activities than go on now. In fact, if I were the NFL, I mean, I would contemplate starting the NFL in mid-August, for instance. If I were college football, I would put in a couple of extra bye weeks and start it early and you know, kind of make us have more time to enjoy football than we do right now.
It sounds like this pot, whatever it is, could actually be their own money. How much more intriguing is that if they're playing for however many million dollars that the loser is actually handing over to the winner as opposed to playing for some sponsored pot?
Well, that sounds good, but I bet they get like a $20 million guarantee each to do the thing to start with. So yeah. It's not like they're... You know, Phil Mickelson is like, oh, I'm just, or Tiger Woods, like, you know what? I'm just going to give away, part of my earnings ability, and I'm going to put $10 million on the line and let them put it on television or pay-per-view or however they're going to do it and not get any money on the backside. So, I mean, it sounds good, but I'm sure that they're each making, you know, $10 million, even if they then also have an additional $10 million they're putting up.
Clay, it's sort of a simple question, but I don't think we've talked about it yet. What are your thoughts on Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee? Is there reason for optimism, or if you're a Tennessee fan at this point, do you just shut up and hope for the best and not really expect much?
I would shut up. Notwithstanding the fact that I'm going to be talking for 3 hours every day. You know, I mean, I think in general, as a fan, you shut up and just wait and see, because I think the schedule starts off really tough with that game against West Virginia. I think Will Grier. Look, when West Virginia is playing Tennessee, they want to send a message. They wish they were an SEC school. This is a big signature game for them, for Will Grier, to establish himself as an early Heisman Trophy contender, for Dana Holgorsen to basically kind of kick the SEC right in the teeth. And so I think that's a really tough game to start with. And then I think, the game, I guess it's going to be on September. It's always a big game, right? But I think it's September 22nd. Or thereabouts, Florida comes to Knoxville because Tennessee should win their next two. And I think that game will always and forevermore be significant. But I don't think Florida is going to be that good. I think Tennessee is going to be pretty mediocre. And so for me, that'll be an early read on Jeremy Pruitt and his staff. How are they able to compete? And what I think will be a massive game in Knoxville. Certainly, I think Tennessee will lose to West Virginia, but I think they'll be 2-1. And if you could come out of that Florida game at 3-1, I think Tennessee fans would have to be ecstatic. 2-2, I think is probably expected, but I think that's a game that certainly is winnable, and it would be the biggest game that Pruitt could win in year one.
I'm stealing this from Chad, and we had it on our list of things to talk about amongst ourselves. What, with the rise of legal gambling, is college football going to have to create something akin to the NFL's injury report in order to be forthcoming and there not to be secret information around there that influences people in the know?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's big news that has not gotten very much attention is starting on July 21st, I believe is the date, Mississippi is going to allow sports gambling inside the SEC footprint. And for those of us who have grown up in the South and grown accustomed over the years to, you know, sort of the religious objections to sports gambling and gambling in general, I think this is a really big story that this is going to start and that it's basically setting the, you know, kind of setting the trend for the future of sports gambling. And, yeah, I think the fact that there hasn't been any organized opposition from a religious perspective in the South to it is going to be a really big deal. And I think a lot of other states are going to follow the lead. And I think the result is going to be, yes, that college football on some way is going to have to adjust the way they report injuries, much like the NFL did. And the reason the NFL did it was because of the gambling impact.
So how do you get Nick Saban on board with that?
It's a good question. I mean, I think the conferences will just have to mandate rules, and they'll have to debate it. But I think if everybody is doing it and everybody is doing it honestly, then I think he will have to follow the trajectory of everybody else. I mean, there are a lot of rules I'm sure Nick Saban doesn't enjoy, beginning with the over-signing rule, which was basically established years ago in the SEC to take advantage and stop Alabama from being able to take advantage of the way that they were signing people and then, you know, gray-shirting and red-shirting and tossing guys on the scrap heap. And so, now there's limitations on how many guys you can sign over a, you know, 3 or 4 year process or whatever it is. I think he would just have to adjust to it on the fly. I mean, Saban's a smart guy. I think he would just want the rule to be applied evenly. I do think it makes a challenge for a lot of teams because the NFL's had this, right, where gamesmanship, where was it the Patriots for years where they would list basically everybody on their report as questionable or you know, like whatever it was, and then finally the NFL kind of slapped them around and said, hey, we're not going to allow this anymore. I think it would take a couple of years to resolve itself before everybody started playing evenly under the rules.
Clay, I want to go back briefly to Jeremy Pruitt. Yesterday, Dan Wolkin, who's public enemy number one to a lot of Tennessee fans out there, there was some joke that was tweeted about Scott Pruitt's resignation, and it says Pruitt resigns, and a college football writer said something like, wow, Pruitt resigns. This Tennessee coaching search gets even crazier. And then Dan Wolkin retweeted and said, what are the odds that Jeremy Pruitt would even get this joke if he read it? To which I started thinking, is there a single Tennessee fan who would care whether or not Jeremy Pruitt gets that joke? And to a further extent, does any SEC fan or college football fan really care how smart their head coach is off the football field as long as they can coach football? Are we getting, I feel like 10 years ago, people were more concerned about their coach's other interests. Was he funny? Was he entertaining? And now, I mean, if a computer could win you football games in the SEC, fans would get behind it.
Well, I mean, I think all coaches in general kind of go into their bunkers. And the one I love, the story about this I love the most is how after he retired, and you guys may have talked about it on the show before, but Dick Vermeil was on a flight. I think it was overseas. And he was watching a television show on, they showed movies in his television show he had picked. And he was watching it and just laughing his ass off. And eventually he turned to his wife and he said, man, this show is amazing. Have you ever watched this? And his wife said, yeah, Dick, it's Seinfeld. It's been on for a decade. Everybody knows this show. He had never heard of Seinfeld. And that's Dick Vermeil, who I think a lot of people would say, oh, that guy's kind of balances coach and life pretty well. It's not as if he's Bill Belichick, right? So I think the number of coaches that – I think let's start with the number of humans. I think the number of big SEC fans who could tell you who the head of the EPA was would be, like, at best 20%. So among coaches, I would think it would be even lower than that. I think as a football fan, what you would want is for your coach to be substantially smarter than the average fan of your fan base. If that's not the case, that's probably a big issue, because it's not like SEC fan bases are known for their brilliance. But I think if you win games, nobody cares about how dumb you are. Look, Les Miles put LSU into awful situation after awful situation. If Nick Saban doesn't come back to coach at Alabama, I think Les Miles has won two or three national championships. And so the results, even while they may have driven you crazy, were still good. I think if Nick Saban doesn't come back, Les Miles is still employed, and there's probably a statue to him up already on the LSU campus. So I think it's all about how well you do. And I think for Tennessee fans in particular, I think it's all about how well you do against Florida. Because I think people have just said, you know what, Nick Saban is the greatest coach of all time. Being competitive with Alabama is great. I don't anticipate it ever happening. But you should be able to beat Florida 2 out of every 5 years. I think that's a reasonable goal for Tennessee fans right now. Win 40% of the games against Florida. That obviously has been nowhere near the case for the last decade or so. And that's why I think Jeremy Pruitt ultimately is going to get judged by how he does against Florida, more so than any other rival.
Clay Travis with us. How is it possible that Kansas would agree in hiring Jeff Long that if the school is put on probation, his contract will automatically be extended to add that many years of life? I mean, shouldn't he be the guy who's on the hook for them being put on probation?
Well, I think that's a function of potentially this NCAA basketball investigation that's going on, where the rumor has been that Kansas is going to get hit with some sort of probation. Look, I don't know who is out there. I saw today this morning where they said Maryland basketball had been subpoenaed. I think the odds are, if you signed a lot of big name recruits, that you could end up embroiled in this controversy. So without having read his contract myself, my bet would be that his representation has said, hey, you know, Kansas basketball is the straw that stirs the drink here at this program. If I come in and they get hit with 3 years of probation, I'm really kind of, it's like a company. You know, when a company comes in, they try to disclaim all liability for lawsuits that might have arisen before they bought that company. They don't want to be buying that risk. I think that Jeff Long and his people probably say, hey, we don't want to buy the risk of walking into Kansas basketball being put on probation. Suddenly Bill Self doesn't win the Big 12 for the first time in 15 years, and Kansas basketball tanks for 3 years relative to what they've done before, and he's to blame. So I can totally see that. I think it's more protection. If it's for probation that occurs while he's there, then I would agree with you. I mean, that's literally his job, but I bet they're protecting him from probation that might ensue, because this stuff typically has a lag time factor for stuff that happened before he got there.
Clay Travis, you can follow him on Twitter at Clay Travis. Read his work, outkickthecoverage.com. Clay, always a pleasure, man. Appreciate you hopping on with us on your vacation.
Appreciate y'all having me on, and look forward to hanging out a little bit more in the future. See y'all.
Absolutely. Clay Travis, always good to get Clay on the show.